Welcome back to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from West Virginia University. It's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practices today. With the one person that seems to have mastered all of this, from the master's program herself, Cindy Greenglass. Hey, Cindy.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Do you like the way I worked in master's program and you're a master here? So.
I love it. I love it. I was hoping maybe I could get to like black belt.
Next week. Next time. Well, you certainly bring in some black belts. Who'd you bring in today?
Well, we are very pleased to have Josh Wilson with us today. And Josh, I have to say, is a graduate of our West Virginia University Data Marketing Communications Master's Program. He is a self-professed data-driven marketing executive for community-focused financial institutions. He's currently VP of Marketing for Whitefish Credit Union. It's the largest credit union in Montana. Josh is passionate about combining data-driven marketing strategies with authentic content to provide measurable success. Over his career, Josh has held positions in marketing, in finance, and in government. And his work has received awards from the Marketing Association of Credit Unions and the Credit Union National Association. A little personal information about Josh. He believes community engagement is absolutely essential to success. He has served on various volunteer boards, including an at-risk youth shelter and a regional chamber of commerce, and he was past elected official. And I want to welcome in Josh. Hello, how are you today?
Doing great, Cindy. Excited to be here.
Well, it's exciting to have you, and I have a very personal pride to share about Josh because he is a former student of mine. He was one of the students that came into the DMC program and is a perfect example of the tremendous quality of marketing professionals that we attract through WVU. And so it's really a pleasure to have you today on the show. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. I know you don't hold back any punches and you like to give hard questions. I know that from your courses, so I'm expecting the same today.
Good. Well, let's jump right into it. Today, we're going to talk about data-driven marketing strategies to support community engagement. And, you know, Josh, you believe a solid community marketing plan is absolutely essential tool for marketers. It allows you to create a network of consumers who want to engage with your product or your service, and it organically exposes your brand in a way that feels authentic. Tell me a little bit about what community engagement means to you. Let's define it for our audience so we all are on the same page.
Sure. I mean, there's two ways. Community engagement, really, it goes beyond just being 100% digital. Times in community engagement, you know, it's beyond Facebook, it's beyond Instagram, but also there is the retail side of community engagement, and it really has to transcend both. So when you're looking, say, in community engagement or community marketing strategy, you're wanting to develop your core customer base to be promoters, to be advocates of your brand within that same community. Now, it really describes to the 80-20 rule, and so if you're familiar with it, it's 80% of your profits come from 20% of your customers. So what does that tell you? It means you can't be all things to all people. You have to take a stand and define your brand in a way that provides an identity for your community to rally behind. And I got some great examples of that, too, to kind of share for community engagement, community marketing. And, you know, some of these can transcend for where the brand is 100% online, but also how they gauge outside of it. And just kind of share an example. So my son is 5 years old. He's getting into Legos. The smartest thing I ever did was kept my big giant Lego box when I was a kid. Those things are ridiculously expensive. Yeah. So he was excited to pull it out. I was like, Dad, what is this? I'm like, these are Legos. They're building blocks. You know, he's like 4 or 5 years old. He's like, I love this too. You know, for Christmas lift, guess what? Legos are on the list. He also loves animated shows. On Netflix, there's a show called Voltron. And if you're familiar with Voltron, it's the same show from the 80s, and they did a recreation for the early 2000s. So, of course, there is a Lego Voltron, and this thing is huge. It's, you know, pretty expensive. It's over $100. It's probably his premier Christmas gift. A couple thousand pieces, and I'm like, okay, this is going to take us a week's plus, and it's going to be Dad building this thing. But I just look some more about this, and I'm like, okay, Lego ideas, like, what is that? You know, I try to go to a local store, try to promote, local and shop local. Couldn't find this Lego Voltron anywhere. And then you go to Lego website, okay, it's an exclusive. So we get the Lego, we get the box, and inside this box, there's a story about the creator. And it's a custom community creator. The guy was out of the Philippines, spent years perfecting this. And if you're familiar with Voltron, there's these five like lions, and they all combine into one robot. It's a pretty massive thing. Ooh. And he spent years creating this, submitting it to Lego, and then Lego decided to build it. So within the Lego ideas, and that's their branding, and they started this back in 2011, users of Legos will get together, submit their content to Lego on the website. All of the users vote on these Lego ideas back and forth. If it gets 1,000 votes up within the first 6 months, it goes to the next stage. Eventually it has to reach 10,000 votes, all from the community. Then Lego will review these items and then publish them. So within the last 7 years, I think they've done like 20 plus different models of all different kinds, but it automatically engages the community to use your product. Use it in a way that engages others. You're buying the product, you're building your own pieces, you're getting that kind of positive feedback from other community members, which continues to engage you and reinforces what that product does as a community that's really independent of the brand. So Lego doesn't control what those users have out there, but they're controlling they're providing the platform for those users to engage in a really relevant community that is going to probably be the most profitable for that brand, for the Lego users.
That's a great explanation and a fabulous example. And I'm so impressed that you have kept your Legos all those years. Good for you. Wow. Who knew, right? Back
yeah,
in the day
knew?
That they would still be relevant and popular today. I want to play a little devil's advocate. You are right. I like sometimes to poke the bear a bit. Many brands are really nervous when you start opening up a community that they cannot control, and that they want to not only curate the content, but they want to moderate the conversation because they're anxious about it getting, you know, derailed, or where will it go, or where will the community take a conversation. Do you have a point of view on gated content and moderated communities versus let the community, you know, kind of organically go where it goes?
Absolutely. And I think there's some really powerful examples, and then I'll give you one that I think everybody will kind of agree on. Well, first off, you can't control a community's message. And I think it's kind of important to realize that for most marketing, you know, the speed of which the message has been, say, democratized, where everybody can speak to others, pass along their opinions, create that community within themselves. The platforms have expanded. Social media has allowed for that. There's other, even more niche platforms specifically for those communities where it really can, you know, get out of control. So it's hard from a brand standpoint to say, hey, we have this great value proposition. We're going to go in there, and this is the highlight of the product, but their customer base is not seeing this. They're talking about the wrong things, or this is being misconstrued. It can be incredibly frustrating. But you still have to monitor that platform, listen to that social engagement side, and respond to that based on what the customer needs are, opposed to dictating that. So one of the elements, too, that kind of see where community engagement can kind of run amok or where it can be toxic down the road is Harley Davidson. So it's no secret that Harley has been, you know, in the news for a declining base. Their older demographic that has continued to be loyal to the brand, you know, is no longer able to ride. You know, personal example, my parents, when they were in their 50s, Southern California, my dad came out of Vietnam, you know, probably saw Easy Rider, bought the motorcycle, lived that lifestyle, put it down for a while, disposable income increased. He wanted the Harley, you know, with the chrome accessories and leather. Completely bought into that at the time when Harley was having a wait list for their motorcycles. But he came back after with my mom on the back of their motorcycle and said, hey, we were just in bumper-to-bumper traffic on the 405 freeway. The engines starting to overheat because it's naturally aspirated where it can't cool down. We almost got sideswiped. This is no much fun anymore. We're selling the Harleys. We're getting rid of it. And as that progression kind of aged out, Harley was not able to create that community that continued to get younger people engaged with there as much as hold on to that segment, which is why we're seeing, you know, Harley as looking to LiveWire and their electric motorcycles to really rebrand, get a younger demographic to more nationally connect with that community. But the other part of that is the Harley-Davidson community, you know, took life on its own. There's also the negative stereotypes of you know, biker gangs, et cetera, that turned off the brand, that didn't allow it to continue to, you know, organically grow and be more inclusive as much as being exclusive to a certain segment. In terms of the data component of that, and that's where it comes down to monitoring and not letting it go completely awry, you have to continue to monitor and get that data of who's using your product, what is the feedback that you're seeing, and to not bury your head in the sand to say, well, we're doing great now. Let's not look to the future as much as ride this as much as we can, make it profitable today.
Good example. Thank you. And yes, because I'm all about data all the time. Tell me a little bit more about how data plays a role in the brand maintaining the community dialogue. Can you give us some more detail around that?
Sure. It comes down to your user coming back. I mean, the digital platform now allows for so much data collection and so much refinement in a way that makes it relevant. One of the apps that's really great, extremely popular, is the MyFitnessPal, which is an Under Armour-sponsored product. It's a community platform that helps you track calories so that you can lose weight and have goals. But they're all about data, connecting not only your social profiles, but asking you to take pictures, putting it out there, and having that that dialogue within that own community to share success. So you have your before photo, then you have the after, and you're seeing people, hey, we're celebrating your 5-pound milestone, your 10-pound milestone, you did 20 pounds in an X amount of months. Congratulations, this is what you have. But all that data is being fed, put out to your networks, and supply. It's all automated. Now, where Under Armour's kind of great piece of this in the brand is that they're letting it communicate, they're letting their products that they invested in for free out there. But when the data comes back and they're saying, okay, this person's really serious, we're showing that they have lost, you know, 10 pounds over the last 8 weeks and they're tracking their exercise, they've connected their Under Armour, fitness tracking device, we can see that they're doing this. We have this really engaged customer. Let's send them an offer to continue to use Under Armour products. So when I'm using Fitbit or MyFitnessPal, and I'm seeing progress on there, I'm getting success stars, I'm getting an email offer. Congratulations on losing 10 pounds. Take $50 off your next order of $200 or more at underarmourstore.com. Click this link to apply. So you're wearing this data-driven approach to seeing who are the most engaged people in your community, and you're tying it back to an incentive that feels like a success in an organic way versus just trying to spam your customers, trying to artificially say, hey, we have this platform, we're really here just to market to you. No, we're sharing your success. Here's some new fitness equipment. Have some on us, and you get a special discount that's not available to everybody because you earned it.
That's great. So first you're using the data, acknowledging and recognizing the individual and their behavior and motivating them too, right? So it's recognition and motivation and reinforcing how that behavior is helped by the product or service they offer. When you were talking and you were saying 20 pounds and I was like, oh yeah, but what about those of us who like put on the the post-Christmas poundage we put on? I wonder if they're doing something there to help motivate you to take those pounds off after as you see them climbing.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this is where it really comes to the intersection of a lot of other data strategies. You connect it and you say, what are the patterns? What are the like cohorts that you're seeing within there? You have somebody that's really engaged and they turn it off after Thanksgiving to Christmas. And heck, we've been there. I'm at negative 20 degrees outside for the winter, and the last thing I want to do is go outside to go to the gym, let alone, you know, you can't run around the block. So it makes sense. You got to make that at-home fitness, and you got to make a commitment to it. However, if you see that and you see a pattern, well, let's start testing that. what is it going to get to get people engaged? Is it going to be a monetary offer? Or is it going to be possibly, hey, you know, we see you haven't logged any of your fitness in a couple months. Here's some success stories from other people that have, you know, kicked away the Thanksgiving bump or pieces too. And you get that connection of other people who've been in a similar scenario who can be brand influencers for you, group of promoters, and you find a way to continue to engage that community. But you do it in a way that's automated, and you do it in a way that feels authentic. It's very, very hard to do, and you have to do a lot of testing, but it can be done, and we're seeing other brands that have done this and done it successfully.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, Josh, so that Paul can tell us a little bit more about WVU. And when we come back, I want you just to think about this for a minute, Josh, so that I'll give you a moment to get your thoughts together for when we return. What can we do about community engagement outside of the digital channels? Does it have a role? And let's think about if we're in a non, you know, Internet of Things or a non-digital environment, how can we harness the power of community? And we'll come back with Josh after a quick break.
And the break is just to remind you that West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program, it's the first graduate program of its kind in the country, focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at WVU prepares you for your career by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculty. Learn more at dmc.wvu.edu for Data Marketing Communications at West Virginia University. And obviously it did prepare somebody for a career. We're talking to one of them right now here.
We are. And we're real excited also for Integrate this year that's going to happen in Morgantown on May 30th through June 1st on the beautiful campus at West Virginia University. Great time of year to be on campus. And not only is Josh an alum of the DMC program, he is actually a confirmed speaker at this year's Integrate 2019. So we're going to be hearing this discussion we're having on our podcast is just a taste of what Josh is going to share at Integrate. And so hopefully some of you that are listening today will join us at Integrate to hear Josh, as well as some marketing leaders from IBM, from Dogfish Brewery, and many others who are going to be sharing some great content this year.
Now, the only question is, will they have samples from Dogfish Brewery?
Oh, I'm sure they will.
That might be worth coming just for that, but, you know.
Come and visit, Paul. Join us at Integrate. So, Josh, we do look forward to seeing you on campus. And till then, let's dive back into this discussion. Where does community engagement outside of digital channels have a role?
Right. That's a really great question bringing in. I work at a regional community financial institution, credit union locally, open to the community. But the platform we have and the investment infrastructure we have, you know, you have to start organically and you have to start small. And naturally, the geographic area that we have, there's, you know, a couple hundred thousand people within a short distance of our branches, is itself its own community. People are choosing to live here. But you still have to find a way to engage them and get that interest, especially if you're working for those small or mid-sized companies. Your marketing manager can say, you know, I can't give our business development department. I need to find a way that's just promoting it beyond, you know, core events. And that's kind of where, you know, you start. It's critical niche. It's critical because if you're in a niche-based, you know, institution, you need to give them an incentive to get and engage with the brand. What we've seen success with here is really finding ways and topics to engage with our members. And that does start with data. It really does. So one of the benefits, at least for financial institutions, is that we have a plethora of data. You know, how many children in your household, where you're at in your life stages, what's your current income, credit score, information, birth date. All of that is pretty available within the core banking platforms. So you can get pretty creative in what you see and how you market to them. Now, in terms of engaging them and getting them, say, outside the branches, that's where it comes down to the brand identity. With our credit union, we're trying to position ourselves, you know, in Northwest Montana, is to be an outdoor brand. It's really resonant in our market. So for us, positioning ourselves to say, what community engagement events that we have that are getting people outdoors, that are being associated with the credit union, and promoting that specifically to people who are most likely to engage. And that can translate to many different things. It could be home buying tours. It could be financial investment classes, auto buying classes, and ways to get other members of the credit union out. Now, how out and about and engaging with each other. So how do you translate that to other smaller mid-market brands? You find those influencers that are within your network, and you get them to engage in a way that's not always digital, but through events, through direct communications, and referrals, other elements that, that naturally get them, I want to say, engaged with the brand.
When I think of a financial institution, I don't generally think of them, or I don't think of my financial institution. You know, I use a big bank. And I don't think of them as encouraging community. You know, it just doesn't come naturally as something I'm like, oh, yeah, I think of my financial institution as bringing us together. Is this more unique because credit unions, in, you know, by and large, are member-owned and member-based, and there's a greater sense of community in your type of financial institution than in, quote, the big bank experience?
Not necessarily. And I think there's some great examples, too, for more national brands that are really trying to engage and inspire with that. So just kind of an exercise for, you talk about bigger bank brands and what they associate with. Wells Fargo. When you think of them, you know, you're thinking of a toxic sales culture. They've been in the news for a lot. Heavy sales pushing, not much of a presence. They're just kind of the ubiquitous credit union, or sorry, ubiquitous bank that's trying to overcome a big negative, you know, visibility problem they have with sales culture. Now counteract that with Capital One. Well, beyond the commercials with Jennifer Gardner, Samuel L. Jackson, kind of fun, quirky, a way that is fresh and new, what are they creating? I think one of the Super Bowl spots had it recently, and they've been promoting it throughout, I know, Southern California, and other areas across the country, is these things called Capital One cafes.
Oh.
And what they put Pete's Coffee and a so espresso bar in there, and they have just a fun, entertaining lounge where you have a free community room if you are a nonprofit or student. There's free Wi-Fi. You can go in there any time of the day, access your account. Capital One provides checking accounts and savings accounts for lower minimum fees, and they're trying to create a community space at a national level to say, hey, we can go in there and we can utilize this. It belongs to you, the consumer, rather than it belongs to us. Now, is there staff there to help out? Absolutely. Can you account, open an account there? Absolutely. But versus, like they say, the Wells Fargo model, which you're walking in there, they're going to zone in on you and look to see, you know, how can we help you? What can we do more? Capital One Cafe is come inside. We're going to greet you, say hello, but this is your space and you're going to use it. You're going to start seeing, I think, a lot more of that where larger conglomerates, larger institutions, not just banks, are going to say, hey, we have a problem about authenticity. How can we find a way to engage our customers, create a community feel when we're losing out to upstart, you know, apps, upstart websites, you know, organic living, healthy, et cetera, where it feels really authentic because the people behind it have a story, that you know who they are, you can associate and connect with them because you have this small community that's already built in there, and you zone on a niche and you identify with that niche. That's hard to do if you're a very large organization.
Right.
You have to bring it down to another level, and you want to do it in a way that doesn't have to rebrand, that doesn't have to have a lot of investment. I mean, opening a coffee bar and in some retail space is a pretty minimal investment opposed to a huge marketing campaign that says we're involved in the community and writing a few million-dollar checks across the country.
Yes, understood. They're very different strategies for different types of companies. I want to get to some other kinds of strategies. We're talking data-driven strategies are sometimes synonymous with deploying varying levels of automation in marketing. You know, fintech would be particularly important in your industry, MarTech, MarTech stacks, and all kinds of marketing automation. What strategies have been successful in getting started if you want to introduce automation into your community strategy?
Well, it's great to talk about strategy, and it really is depending on that organization. I can tell you as much. The marketing automation, the data-driven strategies, if you don't go in there with a clear and strong vision of what you're looking to do before you even get out, before you even do vendor selection, you're going to have a hard time with not only deployment, data cleansing, data integrity, but also what's probably the most key and core piece of this is a level of commitment throughout the organization. That starts with the C-suite, that starts with your board, that starts all the way down to say, we're going to strategically shift how we choose to do our marketing to be more data-driven. And especially with automation, it really goes down to, we're going to market the right message to the right person at the right time. And that allows for efficiencies and cost, not distilling your message across your customer base, and providing relevancy for that individual to see that there is value within your brand.
Right. So, well, yeah, Josh, there's so much we could be talking about, and there's so much that we want to share, and so many questions I want to ask you. We unfortunately only have this short amount of time together today, and so I would encourage our listeners to come to Integrate May 30th through June 1st and hear Josh, as he will be able to expand on these concepts in more detail with us. And maybe have a one-on-one with you. I want to thank you for your time. I really look forward to seeing you. Kudos to you on graduating from the program, and we'll see you in a couple of months.
Thanks, Sydney. Look forward to meeting everybody at Integrate, and get you out at West Virginia and see you in Morgantown.
You bet. Paul, back to you.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.